This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyi Suhibi in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Well, at the moment, I think the most likely solution is a stalemate situation.
That's Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis, on the possible outcomes of fighting for Tripoli. Details coming up also. A group of African leaders meeting in Cairo has agreed to give Sudan's ruling military council 3 months to put democratic reforms in place. Ugandan police have placed musician-turned-opposition lawmaker Robert Chagulani, popularly known as Bobby Wine, under house arrest. And a new tropical cyclone forming in the Indian Ocean looks set to strike the Comoros, Mozambique and Tanzania this week. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, a group of African leaders meeting in Cairo has agreed to give Sudan's ruling military council 3 months to put democratic reforms in place. Egypt is hosting a meeting of African leaders on the unrest in Sudan and Libya. Egypt also is the current chair of the African Union, AU. Earlier, the AU has given Sudan's Transitional Military Council 15 days to hand over power to civilian leaders. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi is leading the summit. One of the two main issues being discussed is the evolution of the situation in Sudan. In Sudan's capital, Khartoum, demonstrations continue as protesters demand a change in the leadership. On April 11th, the military ousted former leader Omar al-Bashir, replacing him with a military council. Opposition leaders now are demanding that a civilian government be put in place immediately, but they have failed to propose the names of any candidates for office. The military has so far resisted pressure to give power to civilians, but it has suggested it could accept an interim government of specialists or technocrats to govern the country for up to 2 years in preparation for a presidential election. Protesters have rejected this idea, saying it would leave power in the hands of the military. Also, African leaders are expected to seek ways to stem the current crisis in Libya. Commander Khalifa Haftar has been leading an offensive against the government of National Accord in Tripoli. Egypt says talks on Libya will include relaunching a political process and eliminating terrorism. Egypt is among the nations supporting Haftar. Leaders from Chad, Rwanda, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and Djibouti are among those attending. The leaders of South Africa and Somalia were among the first to arrive. The summit is the first attempt by African leaders to deal with the two crises in Libya and Sudan. Egypt has said that stability in its neighbors is important to its own security. Days ahead of a UN-planned national conference to reach a roadmap for a political solution in Libya, General Khalifa Haftar, commander of the Libyan National Army, ordered his forces to march towards Tripoli, claiming he would purge it of terrorists. The UN Security Council is meeting today to discuss the military escalation in Libya. The US and its allies say they oppose any military action and will hold accountable any faction that precipitates further civil conflict. Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis, spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the consequences of Haftar's military escalation.
Well, at the moment, I think the most likely solution is a stalemate situation. The first scenario with the LNA taking Tripoli is still unlikely to happen. They don't have the military or ground forces to be able to take Tripoli. There's still a lot of resentment to them in the city. Even if they do have kind of foreign air support, it's unlikely they will do that. As for a GNA victory against the LNA, equally, these forces are divided. They're not particularly organized. And although they're able to prevent the LNA from moving further into the capital, they haven't been able to drive them completely back. And again, they're unlikely to be able to do so. So unfortunately, it looks like kind of prolonged stalemate where this ongoing conflict around the edges of Tripoli is the most kind of outcome. The problem with that and with all of these options really is that it's a purely military way forward. It's very difficult to see at the moment any kind of political solution or even a negotiated ceasefire emerging from this, because the political division, the conflict, the fighting is just so ramped up that actors on the ground are just refusing to negotiate, refusing to even talk about any kind of political process or political solutions to fighting as long as this conflict is going on.
Former UN envoy to Libya Ambassador Jonathan Weiner said that commander of the Libyan National Army, General Haftar, had told him in the past he would never be under a civilian government and he would rule Libya by decrees until it becomes ready for democracy in the future. What do you make of that?
Well, this fits with what a lot of people who have met Haftar have said, and it fits in with what he himself, what Haftar has publicly said many times in and around many of the kind of the ongoing UN political processes. He has frequently said that he does not want to be under civilian control. He does not necessarily believe that a political solution is the way forward in Libya. And he has frequently said he believes a military solution, getting rid of the so-called terrorists and his opponents, is the only way for Libya to find stability. I suppose what many people had hoped is that in the lead up to the UN National Conference that was meant to happen a couple of weeks ago, he was starting to say that he would negotiate. He had attended many of these meetings, and many people were hoping that he would accept some kind of compromise. Obviously, that has been proved to be incorrect, and it's now very, very unlikely, I think, that he will accept any kind of political solution or political way out. He is pushing for some sort of military resolution to this problem.
President Donald Trump spoke last week to General Haftar and recognized what the president termed as significant role in fighting terrorism and securing Libya's oil resources. Did such endorsement embolden Haftar?
Yeah, this was a very surprising, actually, move by Trump. So actually, just a week before, the U.S. State Department had come out with a very almost polar opposite statement, actually naming Haftar as an aggressor and reiterating that a political solution was needed and seemingly criticizing this move. So for Trump to come out and really tacitly give support to Haftar, remembering that he has called the Government of National Accord and the current prime minister terrorists recently, he has issued arrest warrants for them. So therefore, by supporting Haftar in this statement and his counter-terror move, Trump is effectively being seen to give a green light to continue campaign against Tripoli. This has had a lot of a negative reaction in Tripoli, but on the Haftar side, it is very much likely to embolden him. It does mean that, for example, the Egypt and UAE countries who have given Haftar and the LNA air support and other military equipment previously are likely to be more willing to give that support now that they see that the US is supporting this. And the other element of this is that if this kind of protracted stalemate continues, which seems likely, the LNA may be forced to look to other tactics, for example, blockading the oil ports that it controls. Previously, when it has tried to do this, the US has been a key actor in preventing the LNA from selling the oil externally. It's applied a lot of pressure. However, if Haftar believes now that Trump is on his side, that could change the game. We could see some interesting dynamic on that front of things.
That was Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. Algerian state media say that five of Algeria's richest businessmen have been arrested in an investigation into corruption. Among those arrested were Issad Ribarab, who is head of the Civitel, an industrial group believed to be Algeria's largest private company. His wealth is valued at more than $3 billion. The others are four brothers of the Kouninef family, which is said to be close to former President Abdelaziz Bouteflika. State media reports that the men were brought to a court to face charges. A court has also called for the former prime minister and the current finance minister, Mohamed Loukal, to be investigated for the misuse of public money. Mass protests against Bouteflika began in late February. They have evolved from calling for his resignation to calls for changes in the ruling class. The demonstrations have remained largely peaceful as military leaders keep watch. Algerian media have reported that many businessmen who have ties to Bouteflika's administration are under investigation. Last week, Army Chief Lieutenant General Gaid Sala said he expected members of the ruling group to face charges. Ugandan police have placed musician-turned-opposition lawmaker Robert Chagulani, popularly known as Bobby Wine, under house arrest. The detention comes a day after police dispersed his supporters gathered at a beach resort where he was planning to hold a news conference and concert. Halima Tumani reports from Bobby Wine's home in Wakiso, Uganda.
Ugandan police on Tuesday refused to allow opposition lawmaker Robert Chagulanyi, known by his stage name Bobby Wine, to leave his home. Police were heavily deployed on roads around Chagulanyi's house, and all vehicles leaving his compound were thoroughly checked. Police detained Chagulanyi on Monday at a beach resort near Kampala, where he was to hold a press conference and concert. They used tear gas and water cannons to disperse his supporters and then took the opposition leader to his home in Wakiso. Chagulanyi told VOA on Tuesday he was not informed that he was under house arrest.
I'm not officially aware. As a matter of fact, right now, I'm planning to go to the police headquarters to deliver my letter, as I'm supposed to do by law.
Chagulanyi then walked to his gate, where he was stopped by the district police commander. This led to an exchange between Chagulanyi's lawyer, Benjamin Katana, and police officer, Jaffa Majezi.
My orders are either you go back to your house or you'll be under arrest.
Is he under arrest now? Because for someone's movements to be restricted, he must be under arrest or quarantine. So is he under quarantine?
Yes. Yesterday you incited violence, of which you know you were charged.
Chagulanyi says Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni is responsible and must follow the law.
Does the law give me my right to earn a living from my music as a profession? Yes. Am I allowed to practice my profession? No. Has there been any citing of the law in this blockade? No. So because of that and many other injustices that are being melted, not only on me but other Ugandans, we are calling for protests. But we want to do it within the law.
Political analyst Mwanga Chivumbi says the house arrest of Chagulanyi is Museveni's message to Uganda that he controls the state.
I have the guns, I'm in control police and prison and all these things. I will use them to leverage my position. The people of Uganda are saying, wait, you made the law. Actually, we are being so fair to the president that you are only telling him, be obedient to the law. You are tested too.
The U.S. Embassy issued a statement on social media Tuesday, noting that Uganda's constitution guarantees freedom of assembly and expression, which must be respected. Halima Othmani for VOA News, Wakiso, Uganda.
Eighteen past the hour, you are listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. A new tropical cyclone forming in the Indian Ocean looks set to strike the Comoros, Mozambique, and Tanzania this week, just over a month after Cyclone Idai devastated parts of southeastern Africa. The storm, which the French Meteorological Agency calls Tropical Cyclone Kenneth, was about 200 kilometers north of Madagascar today and is heading towards the Comoros Islands. The U.S. Department of Defense's Joint Typhoon Warning Center says by late today, the tropical storm will have sustained winds of about 90 kilometers per hour and gusts of up to 120 kilometers per hour. Both the U.S. and French warning centers forecast that the storm will pass over the Comoros tomorrow with gusts nearing 150 kilometers per hour. By late Thursday, it will be on the coast near the border of Mozambique and Tanzania, with gusts of wind topping 200 kilometers an hour. After it makes landfall, the storm is expected to weaken Friday, with wind speeds dropping below 75 kilometers an hour. Communities in Mozambique, Malawi, and Zimbabwe are still rebuilding from the destruction left by Cyclone Idai in mid-March. More than 1,000 people died in the storm and the flooding that followed it. Countries in Africa's Great Lakes region have agreed to adopt a common approach to eradicate statelessness. At a three-day meeting in Nairobi, ministers and senior officials from member states of the International Conference on the Great Lakes region reaffirmed their commitment to fight the problem. From the Kenyan capital, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
The recent conference came in the wake of a global campaign to end statelessness, spearheaded by the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR. Raouf Mazou is the Africa Director for UNHCR.
The Great Lakes region has joined other regions in the world, including West Africa, the Middle East and North Africa, as well as Latin America and the Caribbean, which have proactively taken up the challenge of eliminating statelessness within the 10-year timeline established by the I Belong campaign to end statelessness.
According to UNHCR, a stateless person is an individual who is not considered as a national by any country. The top UNHCR official says statelessness is a big problem globally.
The causes of statelessness are multiple, and millions around the world are currently without any nationality. In the Great Lakes region, the main causes for statelessness include discrimination on the basis of ethnicity, gender, or religion, the consequences of state succession, or the transfer of territory between states, and the lack of access to proof of nationality.
Since its creation in 1950s, UNHCR has been working to provide protection and seek durable solutions for stateless persons and refugees. Diana Gishengo is a program manager of identity and inclusion at the Kenya Human Rights Commission. She says there have been some successes, such as the recognition of the Makonde community in Kenya.
We've done many things, including the campaign that resulted in the president recognizing the Makonde as one of the tribes in Kenya. They got identity documents, and that changed the landscape on statelessness in Kenya. Because as we work with the other communities, the Pemba, the Shona, recently the Wapare, Galjil, and so on, it's easier. Increasingly, what we are doing is organizing them. We build their capacity on what is required for them to get citizenship, while at the same time pushing the government to ensure that they end statelessness and recognize these people.
55-year-old Zephania Mungani is among a group of stateless persons in Kenya. The descendants of his community, the Shona, are believed to have originated from present-day Zimbabwe during the colonial era.
We face challenges like accessing hospital facilities for our women when they go for maternity. There is a problem because they cannot be accepted. To be admitted, you have to have an identity card. Movement also is a predicament to us. When you want to board buses, such long-distance buses, you need an identity card. And without that one, you cannot book a ticket. Such a campaign is opening up doors for the government to know that we are here.
The African Union is drafting a common legal framework that guarantees the right to nationality for all and eradication of statelessness in Africa. Olabisi Dare is the African Union Commission's head of humanitarian affairs, refugees and stateless persons.
Eradicating statelessness is a major preoccupation and concern for the African Union. Unless risks of statelessness are fully and effectively addressed, we will not be able to realize the full potentials of Agenda 2063, the Africa we want. Access to nationality is core to achieving human dignity and addressing barriers to access to services and economic well-being.
Despite the spirited efforts, millions remain stateless and living in limbo around the world, with the majority in countries in Africa and Asia. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Lawmakers and officials in Cameroon are condemning a European Parliament resolution that says human rights and democracy in the Central African nation are threatened by the longtime rule of President Paul Biya and his military crackdown on opponents. Moki Edwin Kinzaka reports from Yaoundé.
Members of Cameroon's National Assembly and Senate took the floor Monday to describe the European Parliament resolution as blackmail. Kavai Yege Jibril is Speaker of the National Assembly. He says the European Parliament cannot blame Cameroon's military when it knows very well that its troops have been defending innocent citizens from barbarism and war crimes committed by terrorists who call themselves separatist fighters. The April 18 European Parliament resolution condemns in the strongest terms alleged cases of torture, forced disappearances, extrajudicial killings perpetrated by governmental forces and armed separatists. It calls on Cameroon's authorities to end what it calls the excessive use of force by the security services and to put a stop to mass arrests, arbitrary detentions, torture, and all ill treatments. Government spokesperson René Emmanuel Sadi says the resolution is biased and is intended to destabilize Cameroon.
The Cameroonian government is radically opposed to this European Parliament resolution and expresses its indignation at an act marked by bias and injunctions accompanied by blackmail directed against the Cameroonian authorities and our defense and security forces.
Sadi insists President Paul Biya won the October 7 presidential election, which opposition party leader Maurice Kamto says was rigged to deny him victory. Kamto was arrested alongside nearly 200 of his supporters for protesting the official election results. They are facing 8 charges amounting to treason, and if found guilty, they could face the death penalty. The EU resolution asks for them to be freed. In a statement, the Social Democratic Front, Cameroon's main opposition party, said it agrees with the EU Parliament and says all attempts it made to discuss the separatist crisis in the National Assembly have been rejected by the majority CPDM party. Rights activist Edouard Faure says Cameroon is not showing signs of good faith in resolving its crisis, and it is time the international community takes steps to stop abuses by military forces loyal to Biya.
If you want good faith, tell the people we have put down our guns. We have withdrawn our military. Military have gone back to their barracks. Show good faith. Let them lay down their guns. Then we can start talking of dialogue.
Rights groups Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have also called on Cameroon to release all peaceful protesters, including Kamto, and for the Central African country to find solutions to the separatist crisis that has displaced more than 500,000 people in the English-speaking regions and killed at least 1,000 since 2016. Moki Edwin Kinzaka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhibi in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Joe Gill, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And Our 5 minutes newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.